It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
This might be the best week so far this season of NFL football, and the Texans and the Packers are a big part of that. That's a really good game. We've got really good games with Baltimore at Tampa Bay as one of the Monday night games. That's a doubleheader going on Monday night. Detroit and Minnesota is a noon game on Sunday. A little like the Texans, like, man, how did this game wind up at noon? We've got the Jets and Pittsburgh is not aesthetically a great game, but it's got great storylines to it.
Yes.
Kansas City and San Francisco, probably the main event of the weekend, I would say. Late window on Sunday, rematch of the Super Bowl. This one is in San Francisco, so it's on the home field of the team that's thought to be the lesser team, but they're favored by just a little bit in this game.
Feels a little bit almost like a trumped-up fight between two aging heavyweights, though, in that they're not the best version of themselves right now.
Yeah.
But this is where maybe the pivot point is, you know, for one of these two teams. You get this victory, and you get back to more like right, perhaps.
Maybe. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got games that I think are compelling because you've got coaches that are hanging on by a thread. The London game
yes.
with Doug Peterson.
Doug Peterson, who, like, reports that he's lost the locker room, and you're over there in London trying to recapture the locker room, perhaps.
Yeah,
even though
easy.
He denies and others deny that he's lost the locker room.
Yep.
Is it easier or harder to do in London? I feel like if you're off, like when the Texans stayed off in the suburbs of Cleveland this summer, it felt like they were kind of isolated and it was good. I feel like staying in the heart of jolly old London town might not be the easiest place to really get a camaraderie thing going.
I think it's a function. If you're sequestered somewhere else, I think it's a function of where you're already at. If you have a team that already likes each other, then being sequestered like the Texans were up in Ohio, I think it's a great thing. You really get to bond and know one another. If you're sequestered in London as a 1-5 football team where the coach may have lost the locker room, I feel like a lot of guys are looking at their watch wondering, okay, when are we going to get home?
I just need to get back.
I just want to get home.
Yeah.
I just want to get home.
If I were Peterson, I'm just figuring like, all right, look, I'm probably screwed no matter what, so we're just going to go for it.
Let it rip.
I would go old school. We're going to go out to the pub together.
Yeah.
And just old school bonding, like in the army, you know, where you got to just go out and get some, maybe get in a couple fist fights. Harder these days because it's going to make the news.
Yeah.
But some old school bonding at a pub somewhere in London.
I like that. Let's leave it up to alcohol. Let's all go drinking. We're either closer as a team or we're fighting. But let's let alcohol decide. Yeah. What could go wrong?
All these Zoomers are like, what's alcohol? that's been out for several years now.
Yeah.
I don't know. Go to a dispensary.
We got other stuff.
I don't know what you do.
Yeah, we got other stuff. Kevin Stefanski teetering on the brink in Cleveland. They host the Bengals. I think that the Giants and Brian Daboll hosting the Eagles is sort of a battle between two coaches where the loser of that game might get pushed a little closer to the edge. Nick Sirianni's 3-2, and I think everybody in Philly wants him fired. Like, just because he's such a – it's a clown show there right now.
He just seems like he went off – like, he's going through something.
Yeah.
He just – his hair was all chopped off.
Yep.
He brought his kids up to the podium. He's jawing at fans in the crowd. It's not the best look for a leader.
It's not.
They might need to perform a mutiny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Just go Captain Queeg on his ass.
Yeah, that's right. Stab him right in the back, man. So I think those are like the four names that come to mind. There's probably a few others that are, you know, on a hot seat. Dennis Allen's one of them. He already played last night. So whatever his reaction was to that. And it's appropriate we bring up the Saints here because here's why I'm thinking about this.
Yeah.
All of these guys, Stefanski, Peterson, Daboll, as weird as Sirianni is, he's not throwing any of his guys under the bus yet. Peterson is not doing that yet, but he's had some very close to the edge reactions because he's been very agitated with the media so far, right?
I think he kind of threw Trevor Lawrence under the bus. When they remember after the Texans game, they asked him if he had an issue with the play calling, and he basically said, no, we need the players to execute. But the specific
good point,
Trevor Lawrence had some non-execution moments in that game.
Good point. Okay, my question is this. Sunday is October the 20th. That would be the 28-year anniversary of this rant. October 20th, 1996, following a 19-7 loss to the Carolina Panthers in Week 8. New Orleans Saints head coach Jim Mora stepped up to the podium and delivered this.
Well, what happened was that second game, we got our ass kicked, or the second half. We just got our ass totally kicked. We couldn't do diddly poo offensively. We couldn't make a first down. We couldn't run the ball. We didn't try to run the ball. We couldn't complete a pass. We sucked. The second half, we sucked. We couldn't stop the run. Every time they got the ball, they went down and got points. We got our ass totally kicked in the second half. That's what it boiled down to. It was a horse performance in the second half. I'm totally embarrassed and totally ashamed. Coaching did a horrible job. The players did a horrible job. We got our ass kicked in that second half. It sucked. It stunk.
The score was 7-6 New Orleans at the half in that game. In the second half, the Panthers only scored 13 points in the second half, but 19-7 was the final score. Probably feeling a little bit too, because that was only the second year the Panthers were in existence.
Yeah.
Now, they ended up making the NFC title game, much the same way the Jags made the AFC title game in year two. But in Week 8, you don't know that that's what the Panthers are going to be. I will point out, the reason I play this rant is, one, it was awesome, and two, Jim Mora got fired after that rant. They had a bye week, and then coming out of the bye week, Rick Venturi was the interim head coach.
Yeah.
He was gone after that. Do you think any coach in the NFL these days has something like that in them anymore?
What's the closest we've had to a meltdown in recent years?
Like that? I don't know. I'd have to go back and maybe watch
everything. Oh, sorry.
No. I'm trying to think. Like, did Urban Meyer ever have a? Urban Meyer never got to that level of energy, but did he ever have a press conference where he just threw everybody under the bus?
In the NFL? Yeah. No, I don't think so.
I mean,
Denny Green had one of the... I think the most recent notable coaching podium meltdowns have been when... before the age of social media.
Yes.
I think once the prospect of something going viral got out there, then I think it's not even as much of a... It used to be almost, I think, for a coach, almost a badge of honor that they'd show this on ESPN or something. Like, this guy's not messing around. Right. Where now it's, oh, no, it's going to be shown on a loop nonstop for the next two decades.
Yeah.
I think there's a natural restrictor plate in there on a lot of coaches' behavior.
That's a good point. The anniversary for the Denny Green rant, and that came in an Arizona loss to the Bears.
Yeah, crown their ass.
Yeah, crown their ass. If you want to crown them, crown their ass. That's why we took the damn field. The anniversary of that was this week, too, because that popped up on my timeline. But that was
the time of year when coaches are getting especially agitated.
A little bit, right?
They can read the writing on the wall. Yeah.
And that game, I lived in Chicago for that game. I was living in Chicago. The Bears didn't score an offensive touchdown in that game, and they won like 24-23. It was defensive touchdowns. There was probably a Devin Hester return in there. But you're right. That was 2006. You know, that was, I will call that, social media existed, but I don't think we were even calling it social media at that point.
No, it wasn't. You know? It was MySpace and I think early Facebook.
Yeah.
It really wasn't the cultural force that it became.
Correct. I'm looking
text line. We're definitely missing some recent meltdowns.
Yeah.
The text line will remind us.
I would say on the regular, like Bill O'Brien, if we can't think of one, but I think Bill O'Brien at times was among the top three or four coaches who would tone-wise veer into that territory. And I'm not talking about him yelling at the fans walking off the field. We're talking strictly podium stuff here. He would get chippy at the podium pretty frequently, you know?
AFC South champions 2 years in a row, Brian.
That's right. Didn't even let him get the question out. Yeah. So we were fortunate enough to have that here in the city for several years.
I'm looking at, I guess it wasn't at the podium, but one of the most dramatic exchanges was when Jim Harbaugh gave the hard pat on the back to Jim Schwartz.
No.
Remember that?
It was the other way around, I think.
Jim Harbaugh gave kind of like a...
And Schwartz went after
Schwartz
him.
Went after
That's
him.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You always
but that get... wasn't at the podium.
No, but that was quite the exchange. That was the on-field, air quotes, handshake.
D'Amico will definitely never, he'll never have it. I can tell he's gotten a little bit, I guess, his version of agitated a couple times in the last year, but never, you can see him kind of collect himself, and I'd be really, really surprised if D'Amico ever has a moment like that.
D'Amico's this is, we've done this for a year and a half now with D'Amico, and I feel like I don't speak fluent D'Amico, but I feel like I could be a pretty good translator. I watch every press conference like you do. Mm-hmm. I think when D'Amico gets agitated, it's the response is brief. You know, if you look at a, if you look at the length of cuts sometimes, if D'Amico talks about something for less than like 12 seconds, it's either a question about an injury, because he doesn't give answers to those, or it's a question where he's like agitated or doesn't want to throw somebody under the bus. Like the Kendrick Green answer this week when he was asked about Kendrick Green, and I think it was Aaron Wilson asked the question, and he tried to get D'Amico to joke a little bit. He's like, are any of the other offensive linemen lobbying to come in and play fullback? D'Amico completely no-sold the humor, gave an eight-second answer, and moved on to the next.
Yeah.
Brevity. Brevity is the tell.
The D'Amico also does a good job of giving a non-answer, too.
Very
That's
good.
A whole the biggest thing that you always have to remember as an athlete or a coach is that you don't actually have to answer the question. Yeah. And then they'll ask it again, and then you can just not answer it again. And you can go on like that all day long. Mm-hmm. So that's a it's frustrating at times, I know, but it's a good strategy. The text line, people are suggesting that Jim Harbaugh might have a meltdown like that.
I think so.
Harbaugh's at a point in his career where, and it's just his age, he's very philosophical about things in his own weird, wacky, philosophical way.
Yeah.
I don't think he has it in him to get like actually irate about something.
And not to get too dark here, but he did have reportedly a heart episode last week during the game.
Yeah.
You know, he may want to watch
himself. Be careful about that.
Yeah.
And other than that, just people well-actualing me on saying that the scapula is a useless bone. I know it's not useless, everybody, but it's annoying because you only hear about it when it's bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never once been like, ooh, look at the scapula definition on that guy.
It's the appendix of bones.
Yeah, it's always okay. I only hear about a scapula when somebody's either getting pinned or they've broken it. And in the case of Kamari Lassiter, he broke it.
In the spirit of trying to feel better about things that could hinder the Texans' chances of winning on Sunday in Green Bay, this text, Seth. Coach Ryans will have these linebackers ready to play. And just for the backdrop on that, obviously, Azeez Alshire and Henry Toa-Toa, there's a decent chance that neither of them play in this game, meaning Neville Hewitt and Jake Hansen are your starting linebackers. Does it make you feel better that D'Amico Ryans, an actual former high-level inside linebacker, is their head coach?
Well, I don't care that he's a former high-level inside linebacker. I care that he's actually been a really good linebackers coach. It's a really good point. That's a very, very good point by the texter, because what have we seen with Christian Harris and Henry Toa-Toa? That it took a little while. It took Henry Toa-Toa a year. It took Christian Harris half the season last year, but then it clicked for him, and all of that coaching and being in D'Amico's scheme really started to they really started to show up. So that's an excellent point. And Neville Hewitt played very well in 40 plus snaps or however many he had last week. It wasn't just spot duty. Neville Hewitt played well. So yeah, I like that point by the texter. That's a very, very good point.
Yep.
D'Amico Ryans, the linebacker influencer, might it's a different version of Hansen and Neville Hewitt, perhaps, than we saw last year.
Linebacker whisperer, D'Amico Ryans. Yeah. Text message. I broke my scapula on a Monday at a snowboard trip, and I snowboarded the rest of the week and later broke two ribs. That's why I stopped. So
yeah, there
this,
you go. See you again.
The
scapula
ribs.
Can't even hold down our beloved texter.
Snowboarder.
Slash skier.
Yeah. Are you a skier or snowboarder at all?
Not in my knees. I can't do it with my knees anymore. But yeah, I used to enjoy skiing.
Skiing, not snowboard.
I never snowboarded.
I can't do it. It's the standing sideways thing for me is really, really hard.
It's a whole thing. My brother took it up just because my nephew's into it.
Yeah.
He said it was, and my brother's super capable as an athlete. And he said picking that up in his 40s was one of the harder things he's figured, because it's just way different than anything you've ever done before.
It's way different than
skiing. When we were kids, snowboarding was still just like, okay, that's what the hardcore skater type kids
the
did.
The psychopaths.
It hadn't gotten mainstream yet to where it became the preferred version of alpine sports for a generation.
There's people I see who are very unathletic who are decent snowboarders and just love it way more than skiing, you know,
which
is always, that's weird for me because there's something about facing forward when I'm going down a hill like that I like a whole lot more than like I'm on a surfboard or something and my legs are immobile. You know, your legs are attached to that thing,
Your legs are locked in, but can I sell you on this? When you unclip from the snowboard, you get to walk around like a normal human being.
Oh, and it feels good, yeah.
Instead of doing that stupid, like,
trudging
half-goat walk that you have to do in ski boots.
Because the boots are like heel-toe, heel-toe, heel-toe.
Yeah.
Ka-chunk, 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 yeah.
When I saw that, was one of the... Brandy and I met up with Ross Tucker because we happened to be in the same area, and we were, like, close to the... He was skiing at the ski resort. Yeah. So Brandy and I went to meet him for lunch, and Ross is a big dude. He's, like, 2 inches taller than me, and he's loud. He's loud.
Yeah.
You know how I'm self-conscious about the volume of my voice?
He doesn't care.
I, like, if anything, I overcompensate and I talk too quiet in public places. Ross was full radio voice,
yeah,
and just holding court in this ski lodge, and it was fun. But him walking around in his ski boots, it was almost kind of scary because when he walked up to meet us for the first time, he's kind of lurking about at 6'8" in his ski boots.
Yeah,
and, yeah,
he's
yeah.
a tall dude. Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, stay tuned. Next segment, we're giving away our last set of Tom Segura tickets for next year at NRG Arena. Caller number 5 is going to win that sometime in the next segment if you're a big fan of comedian Tom Segura.
Our guy Damien, who injured himself, he's the guy who hurt his scapula.
Yeah.
He runs a skateboard company.
Okay.
Started snowboarding in 1992.
Yeah.
You and I were in high school.
Yep.
Or you had just graduated.
Just graduated, yeah.
And exactly, he was a skater kid that took up snowboarding.
Yeah.
And now he runs a skateboard company.
It's his business.
That was exactly what it was. It was a skater. There used to be... I don't know what the cliques are like these days, but it used to be skaters versus jocks was a bit. Not in my high school. We were small enough that everybody knew each other.
Sure.
But yeah.
Yeah, that was a thing. Yeah. It was his calling. All right. Tom Brady is getting his hands tied by the NFL now that he's an owner. What are we getting deprived of here with Tom Brady? I got an example. Are we going to be deprived of things like this when it comes to Tom Brady? That is coming up next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, are we gonna have a neutered Tom Brady in the booth this season? We'll get to that in a second. We will get to putting our finishing touches on at least the morning show prep for the Texans and the Packers. We'll get our Seth Payne prediction in the final segment for this game.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. You got a prediction. Seth's been good. The
texter made a really good point about the linebackers, the backup linebackers being in the second year of this defense, and it's a really good point. It's changing my feelings a little bit
okay.
in a good way.
See, that's good. That's why it's good that you wait until the 9 o'clock hour to do your prediction. Me,
I respect our listeners.
Yeah, me, I'm like 6:30. I'm out. Here it is.
Yeah.
Whipping out my prediction at 6:30. So we'll get to that in the final segment. We talked earlier about Tom Brady now being an owner of the Las Vegas Raiders and all the restrictions that they're putting on him that would seem to make it hard to be the A-list color commentator when you're not allowed. You're not allowed at other teams' practices. You're not allowed in their facilities. You're not allowed in broadcast meetings interviewing players.
Yeah.
I would think these are crucial things to doing that job. Otherwise... Go figure. They wouldn't do these things if they weren't necessary.
Right, yeah. It's not one of those things they're doing. It is fun. That's one of the things I enjoy about watching a broadcast with a good color commentator or play-by-play is if they give you information that, hasn't been public knowledge yet.
Yes.
You know, it was like, yeah, he told us a story about how Bill O'Brien pinned him up against the wall. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, you don't necessarily get those tidbits, especially when Tom Brady, this is, you know what? This is kind of, you know, I was skeptical of Tim Tebow going into broadcasting just because he'd never really shown a lot of personality or anything.
Yeah.
But he ended up, I was pleasantly surprised that he was really good. And part of what works for him is that, especially when he first started out, he'd be interviewing these college athletes, and these guys were super excited just to be talking to Tim Tebow, you know, and they would kind of have a certain rapport with him. Likewise, Brady. Tom Brady sitting in a production meeting talking to quarterbacks. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Tom Brady would be able to give insight into, you know, what they've been going through and their challenges and all of that. So without him, he's going to be able to watch video of these production meetings and everything. But without him actually being able to – and then talking to the offensive coordinators and all of that.
You don't get any of that.
That's a big part of what really could have put Tom Brady up and over is all of that – inside information that he'd be getting.
Dude,
and he's going to get a little bit of it, but not in the same degree that if he were the person sitting down talking to people.
If I were Greg Olson, now I may be a much pettier individual than Greg Olson, but if I'm Greg Olson and I'm feeling a certain kind of way about Brady taking my job, I am leaning heavy on things I'm learning in production meetings and things I'm learning by going to practice and all the things.
Is he going to conspicuously bring it up though? Like you know, in the production meeting, which I was lucky enough to sit down with this young man and have this conversation with him face to face.
I hope he flaunts it.
Yeah,
I hope he's just like, you know, in the production meetings, which I attend every week.
Yeah.
I think it'd be great. So Brady also is not allowed to criticize referees. Kind of a problem when you're the lead color analyst. Not allowed to criticize other teams. Kind of a problem when there's 31 of those whose games you might be doing. Now, I'll say this. Like, the real conflict of interest would be if Brady were doing a Las Vegas Raiders game, right? Like,
right.
He's the owner and he's the commentator on the game. I don't think we need to worry about the Raiders being A-list Fox-worthy anytime soon. So that's a thing.
Yeah, when it comes to criticizing or anything else like that, that could go one of either two ways. It could either be really good because he does have inside insight on all this stuff, or it could be bad because he's way too careful and cautious.
I would think he's going to steer towards careful and cautious would be if that were to ever happen.
The part about the officials that's upsetting is that's one area where I think with Brady, part of it is right now he's feeling his way out. He's somebody that's going to get better at it as he goes along. But like that super angry, competitive Tom Brady, that's what I want to see.
Yeah.
And I want to see him direct. I want to see him get so frustrated with the way a quarterback is operating or something. Or at the very least, and the easiest avenue into it is if there's an egregiously bad call.
Right.
I want to see Tom Brady get irate and angry about it. And now we'll never see that.
We might not get petty Tom Brady, man. Because this is something that we got. I believe this was the game that they were doing over the weekend, Tom Brady and Kevin Burkhardt. They were on that Lions-Cowboys, that debacle of a game.
Yeah.
I feel like Brady, the first 6 weeks, that he's done Cowboys games like five of the first 6 weeks. It feels like he's done the Cowboys game every single week. But are we going to get – like, is he allowed to complain about things Peyton Manning used to do?
They've gotten really tight on calling those pick plays. Any remote contact was a flag. I saw Peyton and Manning when he threw 55 touchdowns. There were more pick plays in that offense in the history of NFL football, and since then they've been cracking down, and believe me, I tried to use them all the time too. It's a pick and roll in basketball when they play man, and when you identify it can end up being a pretty easy touchdown, but there's such a fine line between an OPI and a legal pick play.
Sounded like criticism of the officials to me right there. Is he allowed to criticize Peyton Manning?
Was it retroactive criticism, yeah. I guess, right? That Peyton was getting preferential treatment, but it is criticism of the officials.
It is criticism,
so officials. You're not allowed to say that. All right.
Criticism of Peyton Manning and that offense doing things that for sure the Patriots also did for low those many years. Like Patriots never ran pick plays, I'm sure.
This feels like you were given somebody gifted you a Shelby Cobra, but surprise, it's got a Hyundai engine in it.
Right.
You know, it feels like you're tamping down a muscle car here, or at least a potential muscle car.
So I guess the only former Patriot that we can rely upon now in broadcasting to get super petty, because we are the pettiest show on radio, especially on Tuesdays at 8, would be Bill Belichick. This is Bill Belichick going in on the New York Jets, who he was employed by for as the coach for multiple one-day tenures back in the day. Yeah, here was Belichick going in on the Jets on the Manning cast on the Monday night game this week between the Jets and the Buffalo Bills.
It's kind of what it's been there at the Jets. You know, it barely won over 30% in the last 10 years. So, you know, the owner being the owner, just ready, fire, aim.
But, Bill, you mentioned, I mean, in 99, you were the DC for the Jets. Parcells was the head coach. He stepped down. You replaced him for a day before resigning. We have a recreation of your resignation letter that we can show here. You wrote, quote, "I resigned as HC of the NYJ," and you wrote it on a napkin. Bill, looking back, which is stranger, that you resigned on a napkin or that you couldn't be bothered to write out the words head coach?
I was tight on space. Hey, look, Peyton, I was the head coach of the Jets twice. I was the head coach before Parcells came there, and I was the head coach after Bill resigned. Undefeated, unscored on, all right? My career as a coach of the Jets, it's unblemished.
Immaculate, yeah.
he's definitely, I'm guessing the future's odds on him coaching the Jets plummeted after that, after he called out the owner.
They never should have been high to begin with. No. Yeah.
No, I know, but it was, it's hard not to fall in love with like the potential for the Game of Thrones type twist of fate.
Yeah.
Or what have you, where like, oh yeah, enemies become friends, friends become enemies, all that stuff.
Ready, fire, aim.
They'll pay him $35 million a year to come coach the Jets. Just please save us. We need you now.
Yeah, yeah. There's one other Belichick. This is a pretty good one. This is Belichick when he was head coach of the Patriots. Early on in his Patriots tenure there, he was head coach in the Pro Bowl. What they used to do was if they had the two previous year Super Bowl coaches coaching the Pro Bowl the following year. The Pro Bowl always used to be after the Super Bowl was over. So Belichick, this is a super petty thing that he did to Art Modell, who was the owner of the Baltimore Ravens at the time, and Bill Belichick's former boss in Cleveland, who fired him a few years before this.
Didn't you bring Peter Boulware because Art Modell would have had to pay him $1 million bonus if he made the Pro Bowl just because you wanted to stick it to Modell? Is that true or is that legend?
Well, I selected Boulware as the bonus player because he was a good player. He was a good pass rusher, could play outside linebacker, and I thought he would help our team. Yeah, he had $1 million bonus. Yeah, he had $1 million bonus in his contract. He made the Pro Bowl, sure. And when he got there, he just walked across the room and handed me his credit card and said, "Okay, coach, this one's on me."
I love that. He gave us the best chance to win in the Pro Bowl.
I wonder with that's the one usually when, okay, you're winning games, you pull your starters and everything, and it always gets dicey towards the end of the season when, okay, a guy might have a performance bonus, but you want to rest him, but like you want to give him that chance. I feel like it wasn't the reason that he signed Boulware, but I bet if you go back through and look at the game flow of some of those games, Boulware might have been playing later into games than he otherwise would have been.
Maybe.
But a little bit of like, hey, let's scheme up a blitz. We've got a lead, but let's just go ahead and scheme up a couple of blitzes just for Boulware, just to be sure that he gets that Pro Bowl. Yeah.
Maybe. Ted used to say that Belichick would mess with his... Ted had snap count bonuses, and he was on the wrong side of that.
He'd pull them just to be sure he didn't get them.
Yeah. He saw a lot of that with Belichick. But, yeah, Belichick, coach of the Pro Bowl, selects Baltimore Ravens linebacker Peter Boulware to go to the Pro Bowl so that Modell would get stuck with $1 million
tab. He actually selected him. I didn't understand that part of it. All right. Yeah. He was handpicked.
You got a bonus play. That's why he said bonus player. Back then, the coach of the Pro Bowl got to pick one of their own guys.
A lot more sense to me now. Yeah. All right. I was very confused.
He took the guy that was going to stick Art Modell, the owner of the Ravens, with $1 million tab. He cost Art Modell $1 million. Now, Boulware deserved to make it. He was a good player, but I'm guessing there was some motivation there for Belichick. All right, let's give away those Tom Segura tickets right now. Caller number 5, 713-572-4610. Caller number 5 is going to see Tom Segura live at NRG Arena on April the 5th. Caller number 5, 713-572-4610. Give us a shout right now, and you will be on your way April the 5th to see Tom Segura. All right, we're getting you guys ready. Final touches on our prep for Packers Texans on Sunday, kickoff at noon here on Sports Radio 610. We will give our predictions. I gave mine earlier. Seth gives his in the 9 o'clock hour. Seth's been pretty on target with his predictions the last couple weeks, so you'll want to stay tuned for that. And keys to the game for Sunday for the Texans. That is coming up next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, let's get to it. Final prep here on Payne and Pendergast for the Green Bay Packers against the Houston Texans on Sunday. In Green Bay, noon kick. Packers are a three-point favorite as of right now. So these two teams are viewed by the betting community as equal teams. On a neutral field, this would be a coin flipper. As of right now, the Packers favored by a field goal. So the big storylines in this game, we've hammered this one today, but I think it's worth hammering again because if the Texans are going to win this game, if defensively they're going to remain sound, it's going to be through the defensive line. And the return of Denico Autry is, if they're getting the version that they thought they were getting when they signed him, we haven't seen him in a Texans uniform yet. This is a huge addition for the team this weekend. Here was Matt Burke yesterday on what Denico Autry brings to the table.
I would say he's toughness, first and foremost. I would say he's a very unique rusher, just as a sort of, not really, I want to say hybrid, but as a big end and an inside rusher. I mean, he's had success at both spots, so it's he just offers some different pitches in terms of when he rushes inside, he rushes like an end inside, which is hard sometimes for guards. A lot of times offensive linemen interior can, there's not a lot of space. It's close quarters combat when you're rushing inside, right? And so sometimes there's not a lot of room for moves or things. You got to be a little bit more direct. Somehow he's able to create some space and rush. Like when you're rushing on the edge and you have sort of a little bit more area to like build momentum and put a move on and stuff because you're operating in a wider space. He kind of brings that ability inside, which is kind of hard sometimes. It's pretty unique for him. So he can rush on the edge, he can rush inside, and I think he's just, because he's kind of like a, said again, like sort of a in-between type of end tackle, he kind of brings a little different style of rush to the front.
All right, there you go. A lot of what you've described with Denico Autry there, Seth, and his uniqueness in how he gets the job. The reasons why he's able to play both outside and inside on the defense.
Yeah, he's just got very violent hands, and it's cool. It's fun to see. He's got it's not like this defensive line group is soft or anything like that at all. Like, they're all pretty tough guys, I think. The Denico Autry plays with a different element of physicality than anybody else on the defensive line, other than maybe Khalil Davis. Khalil Davis isn't as gifted athletically as Denico Autry is. But it's going to be, I don't know how many snaps he gets, but I think it's almost impossible that he doesn't show up in a meaningful way.
Yeah, that'd
he's
be great.
He's going to try to really wreck somebody's world, and he's got pent-up motivation, probably a little bit of a chip on his shoulder for a guy who already plays with a chip on his shoulder, so I'm excited about that, and it's big. You've got this many backups playing potentially on Sunday. The defensive line really has to lead the charge, and that includes when you might have two backup defensive tackles in there.
Yes.
The whole rotation of defensive end slash tackles, there's a lot of pressure on them on Sunday.
There is a chance that the starting defense, and this is really bullet point number two, the starting defense, the interior of the defensive line is Tim Settle and Khalil Davis, that the two linebackers they trot out there are Neville Hewitt and Jake Hansen, and that they have D'Angelo Ross starting at corner opposite Derek Stingley Jr. and Kalen Bullock or Eric Murray, or both, actually, probably in there at safety since they play nickel a lot. And Jalen Petrie's up there as sort of that hybrid, you know, nickel slot corner linebacker spot that he plays.
Yeah.
It's a lot of backups.
I think the biggest thing really is the other part that it puts a lot of pressure on is just the offense. And the offense being an offense that can help the defense out. Mm-hmm. They just go through far too many stretches where they'll have multiple three and outs or punt possessions in a row. And then they come back and they get it going. But they've got to take control of the game. And I think the Texans' offense has a better chance of doing that versus this Packers defense than the Packers defense can just play genuine ball control offense versus this Texans defense, as long as the defensive line is doing its job. I don't think this game's going to be as high scoring as it might look or appear just from the logos and the quarterbacks. We've already seen the Texans aren't as great at scoring points as some of their numbers would suggest.
Yeah.
And the Texans, when healthy, have been one of the best defenses in the league. I think that's going to get tested a little bit, but I think they play bend but don't break and are going to be mostly successful at that. So I'm going to have I've got the Packers mostly by way of home field advantage and Texans defensive injuries. I've got the Packers winning, but it's going to be a nail biter. 22-21.
22-21.
This much is more low scoring than most people.
This is a little like your, it's not a little, it's a lot, other than you're not picking the Texans. That's a big difference. Yeah. But this is a lot like your, in terms of game flow, your prediction for the Bills game a couple of weeks ago, where I and many others thought that would be a track meet because of the two quarterbacks and it's indoors, it's all, you know, all these things. I thought that game was going to be, you know, like a Buffalo 34-27 kind of game. I have Packers 31-27 in this one. That Buffalo game, you had 20-19, and you were right there. I mean, you were sitting right almost at that score late in the game.
If the Texans could have just allowed a safety,
you'd have been right
there.
You
know, we would have been there. I would have nailed it, yeah.
So, you're envisioning, it sounds like a very similar game to that one, you know, in terms of game flow. So, 22-21 Packers.
I like giving out weird scores, too, because one thing I've noticed is you've got a much better chance of making it look like you were really close. So the,
Well, and if you hit it.
If I go 21-20, it's too easy for it to be 24-20 or something, where you go 22, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's 23-21 or so. Yeah, okay, that makes, yeah.
We should make it so that when we do our score predictions, that you have to predict a scorigami each week.
A
score that's never happened before. Yeah.
We should predict, I guess you should force me to predict more normal scores. 22-21 is not a normal score.
Yeah, it's all right, though. I mean, it's better than your 49-3 predictions that you were doing jokingly earlier this year.
it's
better than that.
I said those jokingly expecting an offensive explosion at some point, and then I realized, like, all right,
I got to lay off.
I got to actually do this more seriously.
The thing we're getting texts the most of today, at least in the last 15 to 20 minutes, are texts about the scapula. The shoulder blade, the bone that is keeping Kamari Lassiter out of this game on Sunday and perhaps more games down the road, with people with their scapula stories. My dad broke his scapula playing paintball, finished the game, and then drove himself to the hospital. That's pretty strong.
The scapula, I was calling it a useless bone, and people were well-actualing me on that. Yeah, I understand. Like, without a scapula, basically, you've got nothing holding your shoulder in place.
Do you?
Kind of a big deal. But you never hear much about it other than when it's broken.
Yeah.
And it does seem to be an injury that it's not, you can function with it partly. We've got one guy claiming he broke his scapula and finished the beer, and actually watched football that Sunday by just switching his beer drinking hand.
Yeah.
And then said, "Come on, Kamari, suck it up.
Come on, Lassiter." Yeah.
Should we be giving Keon Coleman more grief for throwing Lassiter to the ground and breaking his scapula?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think he meant to do it, you know?
I think it was a smart play by Keon Coleman. That was one of those ones where, if it weren't an OPI, it could have been an interception.
Easily.
And pretty much the game-ending interception. So it was a heads-up play by Keon Coleman.
Easily. Text message, when we were kids, this goes back to snowboarding. When we were kids, skateboarding with boards that had steel wheels and huffy bikes with cut-off jeans, that was pre-snowboarding. That was the daring thing people used to do, was biking with no helmets and cut-off jeans on. Or skating on skateboards that had steel wheels.
Dude, yeah, those early skateboarders that were doing it in drained out swimming pools in California and everything. It was, whatever videos you see of it, you got to understand how much more impressive it was that they were doing it with just awful, awful skateboards.
Yeah. Text message, I snowboarded the first time in December. It was easy to pick up if you can use a ripstick. Do you know what a ripstick is? I have no idea what that is. Reggie knows. Reggie's nodding his head. Reggie Atatula, John Lopez, they are here. Trust me, guys, we've been talking about Packers and Texans quite a bit today.
I'm not your daddy and I'm not your boss. You don't got to say anything to me about
it. Well, I just want to make sure that you know what your lead-in is doing here. What is a ripstick?
All right, so a ripstick is almost kind of like a skateboard. Yeah. Lopez knows. It's a singular kind of stick with almost like a couple of pads front and back.
Okay.
And they swivel at the middle. So that, like,
you can thrust yourself.
Yeah, you can wiggle your way down the pathway that you seem to be skating down.
Okay, gotcha.
But it's an individual skate on both sides. So it's not like you have, like, a skateboard where it's 2x2.
Yeah.
Where you have axles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But we're talking about snowboards here.
Right, but the guy said snowboarding is easy to pick up if you use a ripstick, and that's what a
and I oh, I think so it, he it uses forces a you rip to have stick. That kind of slalom.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay.
Yeah. Kind of swivel your hips and your feet. And,
yeah,
yeah.
Right. I guess I was confused. I thought it was a type of snowboard. So he's saying if you do use a ripstick on normal ground, then you can pick up yes. snowboard more easily. Okay.
There you go. Okay. How you guys doing?
Really good.
How you feeling?
About what?
About less anxious.
Yeah, you were anxious yesterday.
That's right. It was a lot of anxiety.
You've been able to tamp it back a little bit.
That's right. Yeah, I have. Okay. I did even more research on this game, and I'm like, look, I feel better. I feel better.
Finding reasons. I'll tell you what. The one thing that seemed to make Seth feel a little better about the Texans' chances defensively with these injuries mm-hmm. was a texter who, in the 9 o'clock hour, said, "Hey, I feel good about D'Amico Ryans getting these backup linebackers
yeah.
coached up and ready for the game, you know, because he's a really good linebackers coach
mm-hmm. yeah.
back in the day."
I'm approaching this game like I do a fishing trip, and let me explain.
Okay.
I have apps. I have weather apps. I have all kinds of data that I use. Hey, I'm going fishing Friday, Saturday, Sunday, mm-hmm. whatever. I find the app that is most conducive to a good day fishing, and I trust that one.
Okay.
Like, there's a lot of reasons. Like, I'm looking at this Texans game. Like, there are a lot of reasons why this is going to be an L.
Yeah.
But I tend to look at the forecast.
Which?
That is the most promising.
Is glass half full.
Yes.
Like, yeah, I'll take all the data, and the data that makes me feel the best and that is more conducive yes. to my argument is the one yes. that I believe to be the most
right.
true.
Absolutely. When I go fishing, I have one weather prediction, the forecast that says, oh, it's going to be 30-mile-an-hour
yeah,
winds.
Yeah.
Rain, yeah, cold, and then there's another one says it's going to be 15 mile an hour. I trust
yeah.
that one.
Yeah, the on ramp.
You're out there
on-ramp.
With the Farmer's Almanac. Yeah.
The on ramp for the Delusion Highway.
Yeah,
yeah. I got you.
Yeah.
So yeah, that injury report yesterday that it's literally the exact same six guys who
yeah,
are out.
Right. Yeah, not good.
Yeah,
I'm not looking at that app.
Okay. I do like though
the injury report.
I think you could foresee this being a really close game, and I do like that sets the stage for either C.J. Stroud or Jordan Love to be the hero.
Yeah.
So that's and ultimately
MVP gloss.
That's what I'm. I'm calling this a 1-point game right now. So obviously very, very winnable, and it might come down to heroics at the end of the game
or a kicker.
Well, and they
the
got,
Texans have the edge.
And they got a big edge there. Yeah, they got a big edge there. The Packers are, mm-hmm. they've been cycling guys in and out. They got Brandon McManus there now. I guess, Seth, kind of sort of the same thing I was saying heading into the Buffalo game, which is, you know what, on Monday, the winner of this game and their mm-hmm. quarterback is going to be the A topic.
Yes.
Which ended up being true, except that it was Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the quarterback of one of the teams was the A topic, but it was Josh Allen, how poorly he did,
right.
yeah.
and how badly Sean McDermott botched the end of the game. The Texans were not a topic at all after mm-hmm. beating Buffalo, and I feel like there's so many good games this weekend that this one's getting, not buried, but it's taking a back seat
yes.
to San Francisco and KC and Detroit and Minnesota. And
yep.
Russell Wilson starting for the Pittsburgh
yeah,
Steelers.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, and that's people are coming down hard. Like, it's just, I think there's a lot more take fodder elsewhere than this one, where it's just like there's a good game here and a couple of good quarterbacks,
oh,
and
yeah.
hopefully we get to see them. Like, I don't know that there's a lot of takes, and maybe the place that you would have takes or animosity or what have you, Diggs, Jair Alexander, you mentioned earlier.
Yeah,
there's, nobody took the bait on that
no,
one.
No, no. Was Jair asked about it at all?
I didn't see. And
okay.
he probably is the one more likely to take the bait.
Yeah,
to be completely honest, though.
For sure.
Yeah, Brandon. I feel like I almost said Brandon Cooks. Stephon Diggs is a guy that I think he's aware. He is aware that at least that there's times where he should have stifled himself a little bit, whereas I feel like Jair Alexander just has zero care in the world about any time he said anything controversial or anything.
I had forgotten about that beef between those
too.
Two, and I had forgotten yeah. what it looked like.
Mm-hmm. Stephon
Diggs looked like Jon Snow holding the sword with the entire army running at him, that meme. Like, he ran right into the Packers line coming onto the field, mm-hmm. just started getting right up in his face.
Yep.
Hey, if you're waiting for a kicker, a genuine kicker showdown, the Cowboys versus the Texans, Brandon Aubrey they're both tied. Kyme Fairbairn and Brandon Aubrey are tied for the most 50-plus yard field goals made. They're both 8 for 9 on attempts from 50-plus. Yeah. So, yes, at this point, I'd be surprised if the Cowboys game comes down to a field goal, but still, that would be the nice showdown there.
I look forward to Seth's 18-15 prediction for that game in a couple of weeks.
I surely hope good. That the offense is firing on all cylinders yeah. significantly more
that'll,
than that.
That'll be good.
Yeah.
All right, Seth, I'll see you 9 a.m. on Sunday. Antibodies to you, my friend.
Yes, and victory. Death to my prediction.
Let's get it.